Well, it's good to be with you again this evening. We had a great time in the school and talking about science and about water, the miracle chemical. We're going to do some experiments in a little bit. It goes along with the message, so you get ready for those. But we're talking about global warming this evening. There's a controversy raging in the broader evangelical community over our stewardship of creation. The split is also a struggle between generations, and many of the younger evangelicals calling for a movement on a broader environmental agenda, including global warming, and many of the older generation warning that an emphasis on environmentalism is dangerous distraction from the church's primary focus, that is, the salvation of souls. Yeah, there's no doubt that a large majority of fundamentalists like us would side with the older evangelicals who believe that we have to guard against worshiping the creation instead of the Creator. However, could it be that some of our skepticism about global warming is based on a general distrust of science? Because after all, if evolutionists are wrong about origins, maybe they're wrong about other things as well. And so tonight we want to look at this issue both from the Bible point of view and from, I think, a sound scientific point of view as well. We've all seen video footage of the melting glaciers and the polar bears having to swim more and having trouble finding food. There's all these alarming reports. One man in Australia, while we were there, a professor said that the Great Barrier Reef would vanish in 20 years as sea temperatures rise faster than expected. It's easy for people in the pew to be scared and alarmed as the bad news keeps rolling in. Christians want to know answers to basic questions about global warming from someone other than Al Gore. How serious is it? What causes it? What, if anything, should we do about it? Now, this message is from someone who's taught about global warming on the university level for more than 20 years. And I'd like to put it in its proper perspective, its proper scientific and biblical perspective. First of all, we need to understand that the most amazing fact about global warming is how little variation in the Earth's climate there really is. You know, the Bible tells us that God created the earth to be a home for mankind. Look with me at Isaiah 45 and verse 18. Isaiah 45 and verse 18. Says, "For thus saith the Lord that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it, he established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited. I am the Lord, and there is none else." And so he formed it not in vain. That is, there's a purpose for it. There's a purpose for creating the earth the way he did, and that purpose is to sustain our lives here on this planet. Okay, so he's making essentially a promise to us that the purpose of creation was to make an earth that could be inhabited. God also promised that the earth will continue as a suitable habitation for man with regular seasons until the end. So look with me at Genesis chapter 8. Genesis chapter 8, we'll see that promise. Let's start with verse 20, sort of get a running start here. Genesis 8 and verse 20. And here's Noah. Noah comes off the ark, and you notice the first thing he does is he kills some very endangered animals. Okay? Noah builded an ark unto the Lord and took of every clean beast and of every clean fowl and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor, and the Lord said in his heart, "I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake. For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more everything as I have done." Verse 22, here's the promise. "While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. Isn't that a great comfort to know that? So the question is, how does God keep his promise? How does he do this? How does he keep the energy of the earth in balance so that this remains a suitable habitation for mankind? Now, global warming advocates have told us that even small changes in yearly average temperature could have drastic effects of life on Earth. After all, there's a lot of controversy about global warming these days, and all this controversy, especially in the political realm, is all from 1 degree Celsius change in 100 years. So all this discussion is about 1 degree change in 100 years. And I just recommend to you, when you talk to people, rather than get involved in a political argument, often that can't be won, I would recommend to you that you point out to them the wonderful precision of God's creation, that he made it so it's only changed 1 degree in 100 years, despite the Industrial Revolution that occurred in that period of time. In order to maintain this temperature balance, the energy coming in and coming out of the Earth system must also be balanced. Only an all-wise creator could have designed the Earth's energy system with such precision. In order to maintain this temperature balance, the energy has to be balanced. And let's think about all the sources of energy, the amount of radiation arriving from the sun and even the moon. Some of the radiation bounces off the surface of the moon and arrives on the Earth. The Earth, the only planet circling our sun on which life as we know it could and does exist. If the Earth had a little different mass, if it traveled a little faster, a little slower around the sun, all life would cease to exist. Most people are unaware that the Earth's circular orbit around the sun is almost perfectly circular. It only has an eccentricity of 1.7%. There's an extremely narrow range of possible temperatures and pressures and atmospheric composition that has to exist in order to sustain life as we know it. And the precision of the Earth's orbit around the sun can be demonstrated by the fact that Earth's 365-day, 6-hour, 9-minute, 9.54-second, 66,600-mile-per-hour round trip varies by the mean by less than 1/100 of a second each year. 1/100 of a second. Also, if the Earth rotated on its axis much slower, all life would die, either by freezing at night for lack of heat during the longer night, or by burning up during the day from too much sun. And then we have the diffusion of heat energy into outer space by convection and radiation. Reflection of incoming radiation is about 40%. Absorption by the atmosphere is about 20%. Absorption by the land and water is about 40%. And of all the energy the sun puts out, only 0.45 billionth of its output is picked up by the Earth. The sun's pretty far away, 93 million miles away. Unlike Jupiter, as we talked about earlier, the Earth radiates into space just about as much as it takes in, thus maintaining a heat balance. That precision balance is responsible for the critical balance of forces that drives the hydrological cycle, rains, rivers, wind, glaciers, snow. And then God has to balance the heat from the Earth's core. We have radioactive isotopes in the ground that are constantly decaying and producing heat. In fact, we believe that half of the heat that we have in the Earth's core comes from those radioactive isotopes, and half was there created originally when God created the Earth. And then he had to balance the potential energy in rain and cosmic dust. So when cosmic dust hits the Earth, it produces heat. And then you have the kinetic energy from the tides. You've all seen pictures of the waves, slapping against the rocks and spraying up in the air. Well, every day, those waves produce as much energy as 100 atomic bombs that has to be balanced as well. And not only when we think of tides, not only is it the water going up and down, but the land is going up and down as well. As the tidal forces, especially from the moon, pull on the earth, the rocks inside the earth are grinding against each other as they rise and fall, and that produces heat from friction. That has to be balanced as well. You know, we would think that because of all this energy loss because of tides, you would think that the earth would be slowing down, from its creation. And yet, the length of the earth day has increased by only 0.002 seconds per century. Think of that precision, 0.002 seconds per century. And the earth's rotation is, and its energy loss is balanced by the outer planets. It absorbs energy from the other planets in the solar system. It's like a finely tuned timepiece that God has created. And then we have the enormous capacity of the Earth's oceans to store thermal energy. We talked about that with the young people in these last 3 days in school, and they all know that water has a high heat capacity. And so I thought this is an appropriate time to do some demonstrations to demonstrate the high heat capacity of water. 71% of the Earth's surface is covered with water. You want to pull this? Let's pull this in the middle so everybody can see. Okay. I'll take the candle first here. Okay. Thank you. Lighter's right here. This is my crooked candle. That's what happens when you leave candles in your car on hot summer days. It's a recalcitrant candle. There we go. So,
is there some child out there that wasn't in school?
We got a volunteer want to come
out? Wasn't in school here.
Oh,
someone that wasn't in school.
Okay.
Wasn't. Is there anybody?
Okay. Anyone want to come up and help us with this? Yeah. You have to be brave. You have to be brave. Oops. My candle went out. Like I said, it's a recalcitrant candle. There's some blowing from the air conditioning, I guess. Let's try this again. All right. I think it's going well enough. So see if you hold it down and lower it down to the candle. All right. Good job. Thank you very much. I don't know whose birthday that was, but happy birthday, whoever's birthday.
So then we tell the kids.
Yeah, so then we usually have one of the students sit down underneath the candle, and then we take the water balloon and we hold it over their heads and ask them if they've ever been wet before. Okay? And it's wonderful to see the looks on their faces when we do that. But we won't do that tonight. We'll just put this down here, and the pastor will be sure to go get a mop if this doesn't work, I'm sure. So I noticed the pastor was vacuuming, so he probably does the mopping too. So I could actually keep this balloon over the candle until the water boiled. Okay? Because the water has such a high heat capacity. See? That it can absorb all that heat. The candle doesn't produce the heat fast enough, and the water can pull the heat away faster than the candle can produce it. Okay. And my wife's always concerned about the getting black stuff on this furniture, so we'll put it in here. Okay.
Actually, it did break once. I used an old thin balloon. So if you ever want to do this at home, don't use thin balloons.
And the little girl got completely wet. I'm expecting to hear from her lawyer at any moment. Okay, so let's up the ante a little bit. So this is a mixture of isopropyl alcohol and salt water. And so I have a rag in here, and just a cotton rag. Getting kind of dark. Get a new white rag one of these days. Okay, I'm gonna grab a hold of this. And then I'm going to, what's going to happen is I will set the rag on fire. Some people say, how do you know if your ministry is a success? It's if the fire engines don't come. Okay. And so the alcohol burns off, and the water on the rag absorbs the heat faster than the alcohol can produce it. Now, there's a little trick here. I use salt water because the salt has sodium in it, and when you heat the sodium, it produces what we call a sodium emission line. And so that's just so you can see the flames. That's what the sodium's there for. You can see that the rag doesn't burn. So I don't think that's what God did for the burning bush. Okay. Still burning here. Come on. Okay. Okay, and it's really it's not warm at all. Okay. Now, the question is, yeah, who has some money they want to put on this experiment? Who's got money that they want to? Who's got a? Nobody has any money here. They gave it all in the offering. Oh well. Okay, nobody has any money? Okay, we got a man. Okay, so we're. Yeah, the kids have 50s. You can give him his dollar back. Cheapskate. Okay, you have faith that we're not going to destroy. This is what I call money laundering. Okay. So because this $20 bill will be cleaner by the time I'm done with it. Okay. That's why we call it money laundering. Okay, here we go. There it is. You got a nice clean 20 there. Okay. So again, the high heat capacity of water, which figures into our message tonight. And then one more. We've trusted our money to this. Now we gotta trust some more. She still hasn't forgiven me. And because of that, I'm going to set her on fire. Okay, so we're going to put her hand in there and get it all nice and wet so the water will protect her, and then she'll pick up the propane bubbles in her hand. Go ahead. What?
I have to tell them the end of the story.
No, you don't.
The missionary that we were staying with was able to take that $50 bill and take it and get it exchanged. So we actually gave
Okay. Pastor, you want to nominate somebody from the congregation? Who do you think would be good at this? Okay. Is there a hand that you don't use much? Okay, so go ahead and put your hand in the water. Get your wrist wet too, okay? And I'll scoop some bubbles up like that. Scoop them there and hold your flat, okay? Here we go. There you go, good job. All right. So, the water has a high heat capacity. Let me take this back here. We'll get this table out of the way. All right. I know that's what this table is for demonstrations. All right. So, you have the enormous heat capacity of Earth's oceans. Of all the common room temperature liquids, only ammonia has a higher heat capacity. Water has a higher heat capacity. It's 10 times greater than steel. And therefore, those large bodies of water on this planet can absorb large amounts of heat. Without this capacity, the night-day variations in temperature would be more extreme. In retrospect, the Creator's wisdom is evident in establishing the Earth with plenty of water. Psalm 24, verse 1 says, "The earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof, the world, and they that dwell therein. For he hath founded it upon the seas, and established it upon the floods." See how important water was for establishing the earth. Now, let's continue our litany here. We have evidence of the existence of the North and South Pole ice sheets. And those ice sheets actually reflect more, they have white surfaces, they reflect more energy back into space. That has to be considered as well. And then you have the greenhouse effect. Now, I know we're taught to think of greenhouse effect as being bad, but we couldn't live without the greenhouse effect. It would be too cold on Earth without the greenhouse effect, trapping the heat. The sun comes in, heats the ground, and then the ground radiates infrared into the atmosphere, and so the greenhouse effect traps that heat on the surface so it wouldn't get too cold like a place like Mars. Now, I had a student one time, and she was from the island of Guam, and I was walking on campus, and she was sitting inside a parked car with the windows rolled up on a hot South Carolina day. And I tapped on the window. I said, "What are you doing? You know, it must have been 110 or 120 in there." She said, "Dr. Matsko, I was feeling homesick, and I wanted to recreate what it felt like at home." And I thought, I don't want to live in Guam. You know, the heat balance also is maintained by air currents, and that mix the hotter air near the surface with colder air aloft by means of convection. And then you have the tilt of the Earth. The 23.5 degree tilt of the Earth that only varies by plus or minus 1.5 degrees over a hypothetical 41,000 year period. Of course, we haven't had that long. And so without the Earth's tilt, we wouldn't have the four seasons. If the Earth was straight up and down, all the water would gradually freeze at the poles, and there'd just be a big desert in between. It certainly would not be inhabitable by man. There'd just be these big ice caps. And what stabilizes the tilt of the Earth? Well, the moon. We have an unusually large moon, and the moon stabilizes the tilt of the Earth, and that gives us the stability that we see. Well, you say, isn't it possible that man, through his actions, can upset this incredible precision that God has created? You know, the current concern is that we humans are making more and more carbon dioxide by burning the rainforest and driving cars and burning fossil fuels for industry, and that temperatures will inevitably rise as the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere continues to rise. And they have real fears. One of those fears is the shutdown of the thermohaline circulation. Let me explain what that is. You've perhaps heard of the Gulf Stream. Okay, so the Gulf Stream pulls warm water up the coast of the Atlantic seaboard, and then goes up past Newfoundland and releases its heat toward Europe because of the prevailing winds. And so one of the things they're concerned about is that the ice in Greenland will melt, and because all that fresh water pouring into the ocean, it would shut down that conveyor belt of heat going up to Europe, and Europe would freeze over solid. I went to a climate conference years ago, and they sat us at a table with a climate expert. And so I asked him a question. I said, "What do you expect, if global warming is true, what do you expect to happen in the future?" And he said, it'll either be warmer than normal, or colder than normal, or wetter than normal, or drier than normal. And I went like that. I made that sound. And I shouldn't have done that. That was bad. He wouldn't talk to me anymore. But he was right. That's exactly what they're concerned about. So one of the odd things about global warming is that Europe would get colder as a result of global warming. So they're concerned about that. Another thing they're concerned about is the Western Antarctic ice sheet. They're concerned about it slipping off into the ocean from the land where it is. It would cause somewhere between a 5 and 15 meter rise in the sea level. So that's, you know, goodbye New Orleans, you know, goodbye Florida, so forth. So it would have a terrific effect. And it is true that I think 120 volcanoes under that ice sheet, and so it's well lubricated. It's hot under there, and it's moving faster and faster and faster. They're concerned about that. Maybe that's something that will happen in the future. So these concerns are real. And yet we find that when we study this issue that the computer models we have are really unable to predict what actually has happened. We have the IPCC, and this organization publishes 102 computer models trying to predict the future, but they've not done very well. And their predictions don't seem to correspond with what actually is happening. You know, one thing they've forgotten about is the effect of man's sin on the earth. You talk about pollution, okay, what's the greatest pollutant in this world? It's sin. Genesis 6:5 says, "And God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And it grieved the Lord that he had made man on the earth. It grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord." And so what did we have? We had a worldwide flood. Destroyed the earth except for, you know, the creatures could live outside the ark, and those air-breathing animals, and Noah and his family that were inside the ark. And so what will we expect as far as warming is concerned? Well, you have the flood, and with the flood you have a lot of hot water, warm water, okay, because of the flood. And you have the fountains of the great deep breaking open. And so you get a lot of volcanic activity, throws a lot of ash into the air, and so that blocks out the sun. So now you have cold air and warm water. When you have cold air and warm water, what you get is these huge snowstorms. Okay, and we can see evidences of these. We call this the Ice Age. It took place after the flood. Now, sometimes, you know, somebody asked me the other night, how long did the Ice Age last? Well, most creation scientists would say maybe 600 years after the flood. But think about the fact that we still have Antarctica, we still have that ice there, we still have it in Greenland, and those formed during the Ice Age. I mean, think about Antarctica. It's the driest continent on Earth. It's a desert. Okay? You can't build up miles of ice there in Antarctica today. It only could have been formed during these extraordinary conditions that took place right after the flood of Noah. And so what would we expect as Bible-believing Christians? We'd expect that things have been warming up since the Ice Age. Now, there are going to be variations, but the general trend is going to be warmer, okay, that we see. What we see is consistent with what Paul said in Romans 8:22. "For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now." The context is of believers in a sinful world with all their aches and pains waiting to be redeemed and giving a new body. So the earth is under the curse of sin and groans and is decaying, waiting for that time of renewal. The earth is running down. How about the future? What can we expect? Is it possible as we rapidly approach the tribulation period and the return of Christ that judgments of that period will become increasingly evident? I mean, you talk about global warming. Read Revelation 16:8. Revelation 16:8 says, "And the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given to him to scorch men with fire." So there's some global warming for you. So it's clear that that tribulation period will be a time of great climate change. And it's also clear this is not man-made climate change, except in the sense that the judgment comes because of man's sin. Man's sin being the greatest pollutant on the face of the earth. Well, what should be our position as to the political and economic aspects of the global warming debate? Look with me to 2 Peter, please, 2 Peter chapter 3, and you'll read about the last days, and you'll learn about what our position should be on this debate. My purpose is not to speak politically tonight, but from biblically and scientifically, but I'm not naive. I understand that this is become a political issue in our day. So 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 3 says, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lust, and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. For this they are willingly ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water, whereby the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished. That's the flood. But the heavens and the earth which are now, by the same word, are kept in store, reserved unto fire against that day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. So what do we know about these scoffers in the last days? We're told that they walk after their own lust. That is, they have a strong desire for money, fame, prestige, power. Could this describe some of the politicians and corporate leaders who are pushing for action on global warming? I mean, after all, any actions that governments take are going to produce winners and losers. I would also often tell my students, well, let's follow the money. Which corporations do you think would have the most interest in fighting and combating global warming? And so we'd look at the evidence and we found General Electric. Okay. Why General Electric? Because they make all those windmills, okay? And the more windmills, the more money they make. Follow the money. And of course, there are those who would promote action for political or financial gain. Companies have a financial stake in alternative energy, middlemen and carbon trading schemes. When we were in Australia, the Australian government adopted a carbon trading scheme. And the result of it was that they put their cement industry out of business. Cement produces a lot of carbon dioxide, and so they essentially shuttered all those cement plants and threw everybody out of work, but they still have to have cement in Australia, and so now they buy their cement from China. And China doesn't have any controls on CO2, so they're producing 10 times more CO2 in China than they ever did in Australia. And so you see, even from their point of view, it doesn't make a lot of sense. We also find in 2 Peter 3, these scoffers deny the literal return of Christ. They're ignorant of the ways of God as revealed in scriptures. Verse 5 says they're willfully ignorant, and they deny the judgment of a worldwide flood caused by God. That is, they believe that man and not God is ultimately in control of the climate. These scoffers depend on the principle of uniformitarianism, the idea that the earth, including what's happening on earth today, including droughts and floods, can be understood by looking at the past over the ages. And because nothing new happens, it just goes in cycles, according to them. Everything just rolls along by itself. So what do these scoffers think about global warming? Doesn't global warming contradict uniformitarianism? No, but because these scoffers believe the world just follows natural laws and nothing out of the ordinary happens, there's no thought of God creating all things. There's no acknowledgement that God can step in and has stepped in into this natural cycle, into our history, into our weather, into our lives. Therefore, rather than to admit that God can step into an ordered world, they come up with the theory that it's man, with his industry and automobiles, that's broken these uniform cycles and placed our planet in jeopardy. And therefore, it's man that has to fix the problem. What a burden they've placed upon men. But even if we accept the possibility that mankind is responsible for global warming, common sense tells us that there's very little we can do about it. I could show you charts and graphs and figures and so forth, and how we could spend trillions of dollars and with very little effect. And I think there's a moral issue too. If the rich world, if the Western world has extra dollars, which I don't think we have many of, but if we have extra dollars, How should those dollars be spent? Well, we know things that are tried and true. We know that providing clean water and sanitation for third world countries saves more lives than anything else we could do. There's a certain immorality about taking that money and throwing it at something that we don't know would have any effect whatsoever. We could drive everybody out of work and still not really change the trajectory of the warming that we see. Well, we may not be able to influence the policies of governments with regard to climate change, but we can calm the fears of our Christian brothers and sisters by pointing to them, to the creator and sustainer of our planet. Our trust is not in climate modeling software to predict the Earth's future. Our God is in control. And when the time comes for the groaning and travailing to be done, there will be a new earth filled with righteousness. So, let me sum this up for you. Do you have the spirit of a scoffer? Do you believe that God does step into this earth's cycles according to his purposes? Do you believe that he is in control of our lives? That's an important point. You know, I don't know if the United States will have an active hurricane season next year or a drought or floods. I just don't know. But there's a big difference between climate and weather. A lot of times we look at weather and we think that that's climate's a lot longer period of time. You know, it's kind of an odd thing. Somehow we think that the way things are right now is the best of all possible worlds. We want to freeze it the way it is. But think about the fact that in the ancient past, we know that the Sahara Desert was fertile, that large populations lived there. We have archaeological evidence. And they grew crops there, and there was hippopotamuses there, and crocodiles, and so forth. Wouldn't that have been a better world? A world where the Sahara Desert could have been farmed? Okay. So the idea that we want to keep everything the way it is now, it's really kind of a really a strange idea. I know the principle that while earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. That's God's promise. I knew too that the whole earth groans and travails in pain, weakening under the curse of sin and man's stewardship until Christ steps in. And Christ will return, and he will step in. It's as certain as the worldwide flood that occurred. It's as certain as all the prophecies that have been fulfilled. Christ's literal return is certain. Our God is in control. Do you fear global warming, or do you fear God? Luke 12:4, and I'll end with this. And I say unto you, my friends, be not afraid of them that kill the body, and after that have no more they can do. But I will forewarn you who you shall fear. Fear him which after he hath killed hath power to cast into hell. Yea, I say unto you, fear him. Okay. That's where the fear is appropriate. Okay, what questions do you have? Yes, sir. Okay, in the 1970s, there was an article in Time magazine about global cooling. They thought at the time that there were these cycles in the Earth's orbit around the sun, and that there was every so many millions of years there would be an ice age and so forth. And so they were basing it off that there might be cooling in the future. It never really got any traction, even in the scientific community. It soon got swamped out by the people who were more concerned about global warming than global cooling. Okay, good question. Any other questions that you have? Yes, sir. Yes, so there was a kind of a scandal where there was a hacker that went in and hacked the emails of a lot of the people who were doing research in global warming. And what they caught them doing was behaving badly. They were trying to freeze out the people that didn't agree with them and keep them from publishing their information. But what I want to tell you now is scientists have always behaved badly. Okay? As one scientist to another here, that's the way scientists act. Scientists are human beings. And so we have a long history of trying to keep our competition from publishing things that we don't agree with. And so I think really what they showed is that these global warming scientists act like human beings, okay, which we shouldn't be surprised at. What other question do we have? Yes, back there. Okay. I would recommend, as I said at the beginning of the message, not going there. In other words, not having those kind of political debates. In other words, we have a far higher calling to call people to repentance and to Christ. And so I recommend to you that you steer the conversation toward this idea. Look how little warming there's been. Look how God has created this world in such a precise way. And I think that's going to be a lot better and more edifying than just engaging in a political debate. Because what I found with political debates, nobody ever wins. Okay, you can give all your evidence and they'll just say it's false, and they'll give all their evidence and you'll say it's false and so forth, and nobody gets anywhere. I can remember, I used to teach global warming before it became a political issue. It became a political issue when Al Gore came out with his film, Inconvenient Truth. And when it hit, it suddenly turned from a scientific issue to a political issue. So that's what I recommend. Now, as far as sources, just realize that everybody who publishes on this topic has an axe to grind. There's money involved and so forth, and I would say follow the money to see why they're saying the things that they say. So I'm almost giving up hope to give get an honest appraisal. Yes. Well, you would think that the temperature of the Earth would have something to do with the sun, right? I would. And the sun has cycles. So we were talking before the service about the Mauter minimum. Mauter minimum was around 1680, and the Thames froze over. We sometimes call it the Little Ice Age. And so the sunspots disappeared from the sun, and things got really cold for a whole generation. And never has been that cold since, okay? So obviously man didn't cause that. It was because of the activity of the sun. So that would be one place I would look for that. Now the interesting thing is the sun is doing the same thing right now. The sunspot cycles, we're having many days now, even right now, where there's no sunspots on the sun. It looks like some scientists think we're going to another Mauter minimum type of situation. Some scientists think the cold will hit in 2020. Some say it'll wait till 2030. But some scientists are predicting a generation of colder than normal temperatures because of the sun quieting down. So that may very well happen. Of course, it would be hilarious, in one sense. It's very hard to get people, cranked up about global warming when things are colder than normal. Okay. Unfortunately, it would also be cause famines. And that's what happened last time around. A lot of crops failed. What other questions do you have? Yes. Oh, just heaps of papers. Reams of papers. There's papers coming out at everybody's, because everybody's interested in this topic. We do know when Mount Pinatubo erupted in the Philippines that there was colder than normal temperatures for about 2 years after that event. Because when volcanoes erupt, they put sulfates into the atmosphere and they block the sun. Similar to what happened during the Ice Age after the flood. You had this blocking of the sunlight. Okay, so we know that volcanoes have a big effect on the weather as well. Now you might ask me, well, how much of the global warming we see is because of man's activities? And I'll give you a definite answer is, I don't know. Okay, we just don't have the scientific tools. We don't have the computer programs that will allow us to give you a number on that. Okay, if you look at the predictions they make and what actually has happened, we're really far off. And so I would say, in a sense, kind of tongue in cheek, but I'm a global warming agnostic. Okay, first agnostics ever spoken in this church. And what I mean is I can't tell you how much of the warming we've seen is because of man's activities. It could be some, it could be none. I just don't know. I don't think science has that answer yet. Maybe 20 years from now we'll have that answer, but we don't have it right now. Ask me 20 years from now, maybe I can tell you. Any other questions that you have? Yes. Well, the ozone is actually a greenhouse gas too. So the more ozone you have, the more greenhouse warming you have. So it's a very small part. Ozone's a very small part of this whole equation. You know, the biggest greenhouse gas, anybody know what chemical is the biggest greenhouse gas? Anybody know? Not a methane. I'll give you its letters, H2O, all right, water. Yeah, so water is the greatest greenhouse gas, okay? And we have a very hard time with our models trying to model clouds. Clouds are really tough to do with computer models because some clouds bounce energy into the outer space. Some hold it, you know, actually act like a blanket and so forth. So different kinds of clouds do different things. And it looks like that God created within this system that he created a mechanism like a thermostat. So we know that as things heat up, we get more certain kinds of clouds that actually cause things to be cooler, okay? And so it looks like God has actually made the earth self-regulating to some degree. And even though the earth is cursed by sin, that regulation still is working to some extent, okay? It's not perfect because of sin, but it's not static either. There's actually an active system that tries to keep the heat from getting too high. Again, fulfilling God's promise to us. Anything else? Why do people build houses on the beach? What she's thinking about is some politicians. You know, any politicians here, maybe in this state, that build big, expensive houses on the Gulf of Mexico? Okay, if you really believed in global warming and you thought sea levels really were rising, that's about the last thing you would do. So there's a certain amount of hypocrisy, I think, in all of this. If a person, you know, says he believes in global warming, but he builds a big expensive house on the beach, I'd really question his commitment to this idea. Any other questions? Yes. So I fluid dynamics as far as modeling the climate? Yes, well, they're easy to compare. You can look at the past record. You can look at what they predicted, say 10 years ago, and how well they got it. And we just have not seen the amount of heating that they expected from 10 years ago from the models. And I mean, you know how hard it is for the weathermen, right? I mean, what's the weather going to be like tomorrow? Well, pretty good about that. What's it going to be like next week this time? Not so good, okay? How about a month from now? What's the weather going to be like, okay? And we have no idea. So we're expecting these computer models to tell us what the weather's essentially going to be like, you know, 100 years from now. Now, how's that going to work out, you see? So it's the same kind of computer modeling that the weathermen use. And it's interesting that weathermen tend to be some of the biggest skeptics about global warming, because they understand the computer models and how easily they are fooled, because they deal with it every day of the week. Anything else? Yes, sir. Yes, the moon moves away from the Earth at 4 centimeters per year. So if the moon if you go back a billion years, the moon is within the Roche limit. That's R-O-C-H-E. That's where the tidal force is so great on the moon that it rips it apart. And you get a ring, you don't get a moon. That's one of the big problems with all their theories about where the moon came from, is that none of them work. Okay? There is no scientific theory about where the moon came from that works. You can't put it into a computer and make it work, because the moon gets ripped apart. Okay? You get ring and no moon. And so we have a better idea. It's called the fourth day of creation. Okay? God spoke the moon into existence. Okay? I mean, just think about the fact that the moon in the sky is the same diameter as the sun. When we have an eclipse, a solar eclipse, they're the same size. And when we had that last solar eclipse, we had a big one at Bob Jones. We had a big eclipse party there. And I kept hearing over and over again when I listened to the news media, they kept saying coincidence, coincidence, coincidence. They use that word, coincidence. Well, what's going on is the sun is 400 times further from the Earth than the moon, but the moon is 400 times smaller than the sun, and so they appear to be the same size in the sky. It's almost as if God has said, look, you know, I did this. I mean, it's like his signature, you know, telling us that he created it the way it is. And we don't know of any other planet, either this solar system or in exosystems, where you could stand on the surface of that planet and the moon of that planet would be the same size as the sun of that planet in the sky. We're the only one. We're unique in the world, as far as in the universe, as far as we can tell. God created the moon. And the Bible tells us, I can't give you the reference right here, it said he created the moon for the seasons, all right? So how did they know that? How did they know in ancient times that the moon is what stabilizes the tilt of the earth and that gives us the seasons? How did they know that? Well, God told them. The Bible is a supernatural book. Now, I have another message on scientific foreknowledge. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be here tomorrow night to preach it. But maybe next time we come back, we can do that one. All these things in the Bible where God told people things that were scientifically true that we didn't figure out until thousands of years later. Wonderful, wonderful study. Anything else? Yes, ma'am. That's all right. Well, they're concerned that Saturn's going to lose its rings in 500 million years. Okay, so unless you live longer than most people, I don't think you'd have to worry about it. But there is an important thing for you to know about the solar system. If we put the solar system into a computer and run it forward, everything crashes into everything else in about 500 million years. And if you run it backwards by 500 million years, everything crashes into everything else. And so just looking at that, you know that it's a chaotic system. It's not really stable. But it doesn't have to be over 4.5 billion years. In other words, they say the solar system is billions of years, but the data from putting this into what we call a computer orrery show that it's not. Everything crashes into everything else. Anyway, I don't plan to be here. Okay? There's going to be a new heavens and new earth, and it's going to work perfectly. You don't have to worry about things crashing into everything. I don't know if Saturn will have rings in the new heavens and new earth or not. Okay, I think we're just about out of time. One more? Yeah. The Earth is very large. I mean, it would take a lot to displace it. Right now, people are more concerned. You may have read the news stories. They're concerned about the magnetic poles flipping. The magnetic north is moving faster and faster. It's actually headed towards Siberia. And right now, it's moving like 50 miles per year towards Siberia. And the magnetic south actually left Antarctica, is headed toward Australia. In fact, the North Pole and the South Pole are headed toward each other at the present direction, they'll end up in Indonesia someplace, which is not going to happen. So they're concerned about what's going to happen if the poles flip. And if that happens, we'll be without our shield, this magnetic shield that protects us from all the hard radiation coming in from outer space. So it could be very bad. Maybe that's what the book of Revelation is talking about when it's talking about people being scorched. You know, maybe this is actually coming to the tribulation period. So I'm not a prophecy speaker. But it's almost, we know that earthquakes are overdue, volcanoes are overdue, some of these other things that have happened in the past are overdue. And maybe it's going to be like the, you know, 4th of July when you had the fireworks display and they had the grand finale, you know, and they set everything off at the same time. And maybe that's what's going to happen during the tribulation period. I don't know, but I think we're getting ready for something big here. Okay, but praise the Lord, we're not going to be here. If you know the Lord, you're going to go up. Okay, my mother passed away at 100 years old this year, and she used to work in the hospital all the way into her late 90s. And she would take the patient. She wasn't supposed to talk to them about the Lord. She would get in the elevator, and they'd push the button to go up. And she'd say, "Someday we're all going to go up." And all the patients would go. And that hospital had like clouds in the ceiling, you know, and so forth. And if they asked her what she was talking about, she'd tell them about the Lord. So it's kind of a clever little trick she had. Yes. Oh, yes, right, yes. Now, the only hole it's going to create is in your wallet, okay? Because your tax money goes toward that, okay? So they spend a lot of money trying to figure out how God made things, and a lot of it's, you know, fruitless, you know, as far as any value to us is concerned, my personal opinion. Okay, thank you so much for your good questions. And I'll be in the back after the service. If you have any more questions you'd like to ask me personally about any topic, I'd be happy to try to answer them for you.